Hello, Riddles in the Dark fans. This is Trish Lambert, co-host of Riddles in the Dark with Corey Olson and Dave Kale, and also co-host of Riddles in the Dark Digest with Laura Burkholz. This is a bonus Riddles in the Dark Digest episode. I sat down with Brianna Melvin, who is winner of last year's Riddles in the Dark contest. Brianna is a whiz-bang animation artist. She's an artist of in all kinds of media. Her artwork shows up on the Mythgard site in the coursework artwork that we get to see on the site. And she did this amazing job of taking all of the video logs that Peter Jackson put out last year, as well as the sneak peek preview that he did earlier this year, and split them up and then reassembled it into one large video that, as far as she can tell, goes in chronological order. So this bonus episode is basically Brianna and I looking at the video and commenting on it. Now, unfortunately, we can't share the video with you because that's copyright issue. There's copyright issues involved with that. We can't publish it in a public forum. But Brianna has included sound bites from the live video, and also if you go to the Mythgard site to the bonus Riddles in the Dark episode page, the post, there are some stills that she clipped from these. So hopefully that'll help you. Anyway, I hope you enjoy this. And stay tuned till the very end because we also have a bonus conundrum for you. So with that, I will turn it over to Brianna and enjoy the bonus episode.
Hey, Riddles in the Dark listeners. I am an unfamiliar voice named Bree who's going to be in this episode. This is a special episode focusing around the special live event preview for The Desolation of Smaug that aired a few weeks ago. Some little notes, though, I want to make before the episode starts about the audio quality. We recorded through Google Hangouts, and for some reason, since I was recording, it was boosting my audio and lowering Trish's audio down. It also kept fading over. I think this is just an aspect of Google Hangouts to improve communication between two people, but it doesn't sound that great recorded. There was also a bit of lag, so I ended up talking over Trish a little too much. I'm really sorry about that, Trish. One other thing is that we got disconnected halfway through recording this podcast. There's this one moment around the 15-minute mark. I'm not exactly sure on the timestamp because I haven't edited the intro in yet. The audio cuts out and then mysteriously comes back and it feels like something's missing. Well, that's because there is something missing. Sorry about that. The internet sucks sometimes. Besides that, though, audio is pretty good. You can make out everything we're saying, and hopefully you enjoy this episode.
Greetings, Riddles in the Dark, listeners, analysts, and even co-hosts, because we don't have co-hosts on today's session. Actually, we have one, Trish Lambert. This is Trish Lambert, co-host of Riddles in the Dark, and I am here today with Brianna Melvin, who may be famous amongst all of you all for, I keep dropping her name, and Dave and I keep dropping her name.
I'm the one in the chat constantly.
And we always, you know, we're the ones, Brianna's the person we always wait for. It's like, I want to see what Brianna's answer is going to be on this riddle, because Brianna won last year, and I sucked last year. So you know, Brianna is always our sort of go-to person on this stuff. Not only that, but Brianna, you've got some background,
plan.
Don't you?
Well, don't you, you have some? It's all going to backfire. Yeah, I went to school to study 3D animation, and I haven't really got a job yet, but I'm still working on it. But in my spare time, I work on screenplays, just practice. Like, this is the stuff I do. I mean, I'm obsessed with film, obviously. I mean, I'm an animator, so I do the grunt work technically, but it's, you have to know everything about it anyways, and I mean, obviously, I like the films and whatnot.
So, I mean, it's not just that you lucked out by accident and had the most right answers. I mean, this is kind of your field, so you sort of oriented that direction. Now, yeah. you also have another claim to fame, correct? Because you do some of the illustrations for the Mythgard courses, correct?
Oh, yeah. Like, it's really weird because I'm kind of known for really different things on the internet, so if you might know me from something else without knowing me. Because I was really big on YouTube for a while.
And, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, everyone hates me because I haven't posted a video in, like, 2 years. But I used to do, like, every day. It really helped me, like, get comfortable talking on these things. So I can edit my voice, and I even care. I run a really big animation blog on Tumblr that has, like, 10,000 followers. So people probably don't realize it's me. I just post animation art. So if you follow Animation Tidbits, then you technically know who I am. It's like, yeah, I do the Mythgard art, but I'm like all these other secret things, technically. But I mostly use the screen name 89 Ravenclaw, so yeah.
Oh, okay, right. I've seen that before. I think you've been on, like, the Middle Earth Network chat room, too, right? Haven't you? Haven't we talked on there, I think? Or somewhere we were that,
oh,
that you were.
I don't even know.
That,
I've been on the internet my whole life. I don't even know anymore.
Don't even remember.
If you Google me, I take up the first two pages. I don't.
Me too. I tell people, it's like, you want to know about me, just Google my name. If it's Tuesday, it must be Middle Earth Network chat room. No, if it's Tuesday, it must be Riddles in the Dark.
Yeah, I don't know anymore.
All right. Well, we're here tonight for a real treat. Brianna has put together, there was a small group of us, Dave Kale, me, Ben, Steve Schoenwolf, Brianna. I can't remember if there was anybody else on in that.
The list is over somewhere. It's on Facebook.
Yeah,
somewhere.
Someplace. But there was about a handful of us that kind of got together on a group chat and watched Peter Jackson's sneak preview that was kind of connected to, you know, if you bought the Blu-ray or DVD by a certain date, then you
which is totally lame because we're all waiting for the extended edition.
Yeah, right.
Because come on,
it was pretty smart marketing actually, because it certainly made me buy it, and I'm going to buy the extended edition anyway. So we watched that together, and then we were able to record it off the web, but unfortunately, of course, can't share it because it is copyrighted material, and we'd get in a lot of trouble.
And Warner Brothers has been, like, super fast on taking it down, so we couldn't even sneak it if we wanted to.
There's no point, yeah, because, I mean, I think maybe one person maybe would see it, and then it would be gone, and we would be in trouble. Mm-hmm. So what Brianna's done is she's taken that film, you know, the film of the sneak preview, but also gone back to the video blogs that Jackson did through the first pre-season for the first movie. He hasn't done any really. I don't think he's even done.
No, the live event was technically the first official video blog for Desolation of Smaug, and it's because they already, if you look at the way they were releasing the videos last year, it lines up with what originally was going to be film one. But since the big chunk of that is now being in film two, they've already showed those videos, so we're probably not going to get any until after the trailer this summer, which is most likely going to be Gatsby or Superman, because those are the only two Warner Brothers films that are coming out early summer, and they said they're working on the trailer now.
Okay. Well, and also Comic-Con, there's bound to be something,
There'll probably be another video blog thing like they did last year.
Yeah. I mean, CinemaCon has come and gone, and, you know, that was the one last year when the Nazgul got announced. You know, the scene that's, that actually he re-released in the sneak preview is the scene of Gandalf and Radagast going down into the tombs of the Nazgul.
It was actually that scene. It was, like, officially that was the one.
That was the one that was at CinemaCon?
Oh. That's why we were freaking out. That's not even that. They made a big deal out of that.
Yeah. But CinemaCon's come and gone now, and in fact, the media basically said he didn't really, you know, there wasn't a big flap for The Hobbit at CinemaCon. So it's been kind of disappointing. It's been kind of, you know, it's slow goings, kind of, you know, in Riddles in the Dark Land at this point, because, I mean, I have to admit, you know, Dave and Corey and I, when we talk about what topic to talk about, we're sort of dragging our heels a little bit in terms of going much further forward in the story, because we figure that, you know, mid-year, and beyond, you know, Jackson's going to, you know, be revving up the trailer engine and whatever else. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we kind of want to wait to see what comes out before we get to really talking about, you know, beyond, well, I suppose really beyond the barrels.
Uh-huh. It's better not to have all your riddles prove wrong halfway through the year.
Right, exactly. Like, you know, we had a couple last year that, you know, obviously we're going to be wrong before the movie ever came out. So we're kind of waiting, and also to see kind of, you know, what gets talked about. And, you know, right now, everything that the... Because I, you know, I'll notice an interview with Martin Freeman, an interview with Richard Armitage, an interview with this dwarf or that dwarf, but it's pretty all recycled stuff right now. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not really saying anything new, and I figure it's not going to be until, you know, Jackson pushes the trigger button, you know, where they're now allowed to say some more stuff about the. And Evangeline Lilly hasn't really even been interviewed all that much now, and you know, so anyway, so I'm hoping, you know, I got my fingers crossed that, you know, mid-year and beyond, we're going to get, like you said, you know, Gatsby or Superman, which is like what you said, early summer, right?
Yeah, I believe
we're gonna get a trailer.
I can't remember the release dates, but yeah, it's either end of May or beginning of June or something like that.
Okay, so this is all we have at the moment, and unfortunately, like we said, you know, we can't really share with you this particular piece that Brianna put together.
We can describe it thoroughly.
We can describe it to you. I said we could have done it with Lego characters and finger puppets.
Yes.
But we'll describe
it to you. And your birds and dogs.
And my birds and dogs. That's right. They could carry trays. It would be great.
Your cat could be the necromancer hiding them.
Perfect.
You can't get it because he's in a tower, which is the fridge.
That's right. That's right. The Dol Guldur refrigerator. And it's black, too.
Oh, okay. Perfect.
This is a 13-minute piece that you've put together. And we're starting. Actually, you're kind of starting. So you put it together in as chronological in order as you can.
Based on what I think the film's going to be, but I offset all the Gandalf stuff because that can be sprinkled in, and I bet it's not even determined by the filmmakers yet because it's going to be more of an edited thing, what feels right at the time. Mm-hmm. The video that we're talking about is something I edited together, all the production videos, based on what footage is relevant. It doesn't include, it includes a lot of set stuff too, just because you can guess things based on set details. It's really just, most of this footage is already available, but the live footage I threw in here as well, so I can't post it. The thing about the live event is people said not a lot of stuff happened, but I went back and watched it like frame by frame. I was like, there's a lot in here. I didn't realize what was in here. And I think actually this will help with like making some riddles.
Oh, cool. Okay.
I should say,
I told you before we started I was going to give Dave credit for this, and I want to stop and say that, you know, the Dave Kale World Domination Network, this is yet another brainchild of Dave Kale, this podcast that Brian and I are doing.
And when we say brainchild, he was just like, you want to do a podcast analysis after you go through the video? I was like, okay. And that was it. It was like one sentence.
One thing about my buddy Dave, he's a real idea man.
That's why you organize them.
That's why I organize. That's right.
Gotta control the boys.
Well, we know what happened. The one that he said he wanted to do post-production on, you know, the Girls in the Dark, which was the last one of season one. And, you know, that was at Christmas time. And when did it come out? March?
It came out with the DVD. It was planned, remember?
That's right.
I'm glad I listened to that one live.
I mean, it cracked me up because, you know, the thing I told Corey, I said, look, you know, because he said something about, you know, he said, I forget. He didn't actually say, why don't you do it? He didn't say that because Corey just doesn't do that. But I said to Corey, look, Dave actually called me specifically after we were done recording that episode and specifically asked to do it. So it's like, I don't want to step in, you know, and I actually did ask Dave a couple of times, but he really had, you know, he wanted to play that Christopher Lee music, you know, so anyway, it was pretty funny. So that's why I coordinate. And anybody that listened to season one last year when Dave was still doing the post-production remembers that it got to be kind of a joke, you know, like the length of time it would take for the episodes to come out on iTunes.
I can barely remember it now. It's kind of all blur.
Yeah, I know. And I'm dragging a little bit just now because I've taken on a full-time job now, which I didn't have last year, but I think I'm still doing better than Dave did. So.
Don't you mean stalling for new videos from Peter Jackson?
That's right, stalling for new videos.
We kind of might have to. You guys kind of might have to start doing that.
I know.
Well, we just thrown a Tolkien professor Q&A there in the middle.
That's right. And the other thing is I've got the analysts in my back pocket. You know, push comes to shove, we get the analysts to come be guests, you know, each singly. Come and be a guest on the show.
Yeah. Well, you know, kind of an honorary analyst anyways.
You're an honorary analyst, yeah. So we could get the analysts. You know, like I already talked to Dave about having Father Roderick, you know, who does Secrets of the Hobbit podcast, but he hasn't done any so far this year. And and so I said to Dave, you know, what I would like, and he hasn't filled out any of the grid either, you know, for Riddles of the Dark, because usually Dave, because they're doing Secrets of the Hobbit together, Dave usually can ping him, you know, to ask him during the show. Right. I said, why don't we have Father Roderick actually on the show at more or less the midpoint, which would be probably like, you know, sometime in June, like the mid-June date for the episode. And I said, let's have that be our review, you know, review of the year up till now, and we'll go through all the riddles. We'll get his answers. Uh-huh. You know, it'll be a great kickoff for him to resume Secrets of the Hobbit, and it's a good filler episode.
I think if there was ever a good riddle to have all of them come together, it would probably be the one that will eventually be on the split, but who knows when that will actually be. Like, we need more before we even get to that, but...
We do. I think we're going to do the beginning of the movie one probably pretty soon. Because I think, you know, given what we've got the show for that.
Oh, I think we know exactly what's going to happen in the first hour of this movie. I think, like, after this, we'll all know exactly what's going to happen. I think
well,
I know.
Well, except that, you know, there's one piece of footage, and I'm trying to remember where I saw this. It was just recently I saw it, and I am just blanking on when it, where it was I saw it, of that was actually predates this beginning scene that you've put into the movie, which was Gandalf and Thorin, and they're, I think they're kind of at, not the bottom of the Carrick, but they're like at the bottom of the top piece, you know, like the bear's head, and then it kind of slants down, and then I think it starts to spiral down.
I don't think I've seen that, but I mean, I finally rewatched the first movie the first time, like a week ago.
Right.
And I still don't like it. But
they're very coy about it in the first movie. They don't.
You could
show
see
it.
Steps. I mean, you could definitely see steps.
Right. You don't actually see the bear head. I mean, the only reason we know it's a bear head is because of the book that came out, you know, the Chronicles book. But I saw a scene, you know, where they had some, I think they had some green screen and stuff, and it looked like where what it was maybe that first, you know, they were maybe coming down the Carrick at that first level, maybe going down, you know, getting ready to go downstairs. And so that was kind of like, the reason I remember that was because that's, you know, the question of how's the movie going to start? You know, what scene is going to, are we going to have exposition to start with? Are we going to just start right off at the Carrick? You know, I mean, it's just like, we don't know. But
we'll get to that. We're going to talk about that specifically. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Let's walk through this. Let's walk through this. There's a bunch of stuff shown. I'd say we got, I think Jackson got up to some scenes of Bilbo inside the mountain.
As we go through this live footage, there are some certain things we should all be looking for, and it's sort of how I structured putting all this footage together chronologically, which I really did as show notes. Also, I apologize in advance. I'm a fast talker.
Oh, good. We're a good pair.
Yeah, and I also have a little bit of Corey season 10 to go along, but in a sort of lecture mode. I don't know why. I'm not a teacher. I don't have an excuse. But we should look for costumes, changes in costumes. We should look for subtle differences between the sets, because a key prop could give something away. Some of the best things are hidden in two frames of footage between a sizzle reel at the end. There's also some things in the background. I didn't notice Balin in one of the backgrounds where Toriel and Legolas are talking for the longest time, but he's there, and it's really obvious he's there when you actually look for it. There will sometimes be shots of what's actually on the camera, because you'll see the camera in the behind-the-screens footage within the view. Everyone's looking at, like, Martin Freeman in that video, but then if you actually look to the side, you'll see what the actual shot is, which is really informative, because shots are planned, composition, you know, all that junk. And just looking at the amount of footage, having it all in front of you makes you realize this is going to take some time. We're not going to have time for all these other things we think is going to be in the movie. I really don't think we're going to get that far with the Gandalf story arc because they're dragging out the necromancer thing. But we'll also get to that. I don't want to get ahead of myself. Yeah, that's kind of the things we have to look for.
Well, I think, you know, I think the stuff is, this is actually really good. This is a great checklist, actually, for when, you know, video logs and trailers come out.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully one will come
out
soon.
Yeah, folks, you know, we may have to remind folks of this, you know, costume changes, subtle differences, you know, look for this. So it's a great little tutorial about, you know, looking for that stuff. But, okay.
And based on what I have observed, it seems that the overall structure of the film, which even though we shouldn't completely be focusing on, we should be focusing on the little riddles. I find that if we focus too much on a riddle, that's when you start getting the answer wrong. And if you don't think about riddle, if you don't think about film three, you're going to get stuff wrong because they're all connected. They were originally all one script. So it seems that second films and trilogies are really hard because they're giant second acts and they don't have to follow the three act thing. Two Towers is really tricky to structure. It made sense that the first Hobbit film matched Fellowship of the Ring because they are very similar in content and structure, but this one's going to be harder. But it seems that they're, instead of acts, they're kind of having chapters based on locations. And we have the first chapter being the events in Mirkwood, the second being the stuff in Lake Town, and then finally what's going on in Smaug with Dol Guldur stuff sprinkled in, just to keep in mind. Going through the live event stuff, we're going to be doing it concurrently with the pre-production stuff. I'm not able to tell you what videos come from which because I pushed them all together and I don't have any notes for myself telling me. But I mean, just rewatch them if you really want to look. And I'll be pretty descriptive.
Some I do remember, like this first scene that we're looking at where the company is running and they run into Bjorn's house. That's from the sneak preview, I know.
Yeah, I've also kind of, my mind has mixed them all up into this video now because I was just like, edit. Edit. So we're going to talk about things in chronological, blah, blah, blah. I can't say the word either. Order.
Chronological order.
Yes. You can always say it when it's not you saying it. But
That's right.
Rather than the order they present it in the actual live event, because the live event, people think, oh, it was an hour, lots of things were shown. And while that's technically true, a lot of it was just them walking around and Pete going, hey, look at this movie poster. I like this movie.
And he was also kind of, you know, teasing us, you know, like with the dragons. You know, they're designing dragons, and they were all bogus.
How to Train Your Dragon. They were all How to Train a Dragon in really bad 3D stuff, which is great because it shows the insanity that happens. I am the person who works at this little desk.
Right.
You go insane. Right. So you're like, I have the power to make these really weird things. I'll make a crappy dragon that doesn't do anything.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I actually think that we know what Smaug looks like based on the first film, because when I rewatched it the other day, I was like, I can see everything.
And it also is really similar, isn't it, to that one that Alan Lee did?
Yeah, I think he's not, based on what I observed, he's not as long. You can see his leg.
So you can see four feet, can't you?
Yeah, so you can guess the length based on the time it takes to grow. I don't know why I'm like this, but you can see the length by how far it goes. You can sort of guess how heavy it is based on how the animator made it walk. You can see the shape of the actual skull based on how the coins are falling. I'll maybe go over this later and draw it on top of the screen still, but I think, like, everything is, you can guess what it is, because there's so much intention behind every little tiny thing in film that you just have to kind of work backwards, and then you can figure it out.
We're reverse engineering the dragon.
Yeah, reverse engineering the dragon. I think he's definitely not as worm-like as we are hoping he'll be.
He's
very heavy, and his chest looks like it's the heavy thing, but I'm getting off track. Let's start with Bjorn. We're gonna go through the whole film and based on all the footage we've seen ever.
Okay.
So what we have seen based on the live event first is a shot of the dwarves all running together with Gandalf on the lead into what appears to be Bjorn's house, and they all run in together, defeating all hope that they'll come in one by one.
Right, right.
And there's also a pig and an axe, apparently. Yeah, so I guess they must be running from the Carrick down, and Gandalf knows where they are. But it seems really weird to start with them running like this at the very beginning of the film, which makes me wonder if there's going to be a prologue before that matches the tone that we'll edit, transfer into it. I'm not really sure.
Right.
It's one of the things I'm less clear about, because they kind of went prologue heavy on number one.
Right. Well, they kind of did prologues in all three of them.
But not like five in the beginning. Of each movie.
Yeah, that's true. When I first saw that scene, I automatically assumed they were running from orcs. But when I brought it up to the crowd, I think it was on the Riddles in the Dark page, somebody mentioned that it might be they're running from bees, which makes a lot more sense. And in fact, I'm hoping it's that.
Is this Winnie the Pooh now?
No, but you know, Bjorn
wants some honey.
Bjorn was a big beekeeper.
Oh, I totally don't remember this, but I forgot.
Yeah, and I mean, he served him honey cakes, and I mean, it was a big, you know, it was a thing. It was a thing, Bjorn. So we're hoping that, you know, somebody said giant bees. I don't care if they're giant. I mean, it's fine.
Oh, that'd be so, no, because then they'd be stupid CG bees that don't look real at all.
But bees would be, you know, that would be, because I could even almost see that Bjorn, maybe as a beekeeper also, the bees kind of guard his, you know, his house for him. I could even see that. So anyway, so that could be what's going on here. I don't know. But anyway, they're running.
Yeah, it's a pretty wide shot. It's from the woods, and it appears to be a clearing within the woods, because I can see a great deal, but who knows how much that will change in post.
Right.
Probably not that much, because this is an on-location shot rather than a green screen shot. And what it reminds me of is I'm not sure if it's extended edition or not, but Fellowship of the Ring, after they come down from Moria and they go into the woods, this part where they're running across the clearing quickly to get under the cover of the trees, even though they're pretty safe away from the orcs at that point. But I guess they were firing arrows while they were mourning during the Gandalf lament song that was playing.
Right.
But here they're pretty far away. I mean, the eagles took them pretty far away. But I guess maybe they just want cover. It could be as simple as that. Or there could be beasts.
Or there could be bees. Yeah. Okay. Now we've had still photos. I think I posted them on one of our episodes last year of Bjorn's mm-hmm. house. But, you know, I mean, I don't – and it's weird because they kind of are running into – it looks like some kind of tree thing. I mean, it doesn't look like the outside of his house, what they're running into. But but when we get onto the inside of his house, then it looks right.
Yeah, it looks like he's in a hill.
Yeah.
Like a Viking style, like a lot of Viking style houses, like the insulation was literally a grassy roof, but it's everywhere. But there's a tree growing on top. So, and this is a green screen shot that transfers to from the on location shot.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's going to be interesting kind of to see how this thing actually
works. Cantelf has no problem letting himself in. Didn't even knock.
Yeah, absolutely.
How rude.
And this certainly does handle the how are we going to introduce everybody to Bjorn thing. In fact, it may even be, given that the next scene that we see is this axe, you know, which I presume is Bjorn chopping wood, he may not even be inside the house. They may have to go out and find him outside.
Oh, he's not here. Who's going to make his dinner?
No. Yeah, really. Where's Bjorn?
Who knows where he is? I assume the axe is him.
Set. So. This is one of my favorite sets so far. I mean, I just think it's beautiful. And
it's probably going to be one of the most northern sets.
Yeah.
Ignoring the, this is a green screen shot during one of the videos, I think, earlier on. And what we're looking at right now has the stone thing, but that's just because there's a green screen behind. The stone thing is actually a completely different set that Pete's just standing, and he has stills loaded on a green screen. I'm pretty sure the stone thing is actually a Mirkwood thing. But, yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's a really good set because of all the carved bears.
The set is great. All the carved, and the wood, everything. It's really cool. Mm-hmm. You know, I was thinking, one of the things is, you know, if Warner Brothers does a Hobbit thing like they did a Harry Potter thing at Universal Studios, you know, this will be one of the sets. I mean, this will be one of the places that'll be in that
Why don't
attraction.
They just take out the middle of the United States since nobody lives there?
I know, really.
And just turn it into the same geography.
We've got the guy walking in the door. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, and there's just the detail, all the bear carvings on the table, everything's huge. They show the people in the company sitting in the chairs and stuff, and, I mean, they're just, like, dwarfed. Ha, 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 ha.
Oh, look here. Bees. Wax candles that are taken directly from hives. I didn't notice that.
Hives. No. There we go. See there? Yeah, so they almost look like candles, don't they? Don't they look like
Yeah, he's probably using them for candles, right? But he took them directly from the hive because they still have all the working.
All the honeycombs,
probably a bee living in it still.
Yeah, it might be. I wonder, what is that thing on the that's below those on the shelf? See, there's like a, that thing there.
It looks like cloth, maybe wool.
Oh, like cloth, okay.
Yeah, just...
It's like it's just folded. Oh, it looks like it's folded over a chair or something. Yeah.
He likes to weave and eat honey from pots. And
somebody likes to carve wood because behind Peter, for example, there's this amazing carved.
Yeah, the whole place is carved.
The whole place is carved.
Maybe his backstory is in one of these shots on the wood.
There you go. Yeah, maybe. I wonder.
In the Rohan sets, Helm, you know, Helm is on one of the tapestries. Like, the
is
guy,
really?
Like if you look at the art of books for the tapestries that you can't even see in the movie, they put all the like history of the Orlings on the tapestries.
Boy,
there's and the amazing. Guys who originally did the art on the original Lord of the Rings film, who don't appear to be in the art book for the new one, hence why I didn't buy it because I don't like the art as much. they threw in a ton of nerdy things because they're all like D&D guys. They all work.
Yeah.
I think they've all worked for Wizards of the Coast at one point or another.
Oh, okay.
So they added all this subtle stuff in. I'm like, nobody knows about this. Why doesn't anyone know
that's
about
awesome.
This? I think there'll be definitely some secrets hidden in here that we'll never ever find.
Well, we'll have to pay attention. Mm-hmm. We have Bilbo sitting in what I'm assuming is probably Bjorn's chair, and it's enormous.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a huge bear is the back of it.
And it's even bigger because Bilbo's sitting in it.
Of course, because Bilbo's sitting in it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he's got this mug. I mean, this mug that's huge.
It comes in pipes.
Yeah, and the bowls are huge. I mean, everything's huge. But, I mean, and I remember this is how it was described in the book, or at least the picture I got in my mind of it. So, you know, that's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, this is one of the shots, I mean, where you can see the camera, but there's so many stuff.
Oh, yeah, I got it.
Yeah, you can see Gloin or whatever looking at something.
Right.
So I assume that would
Which
be for
green,
it.
So
you know, it's at eye length, so that's not... who knows what context this is in, or if he's just resting. It's really a dog serving a plate because it's the right height.
Ah, could be, sure. Because what it is
could just be the guy on a break getting tired of holding it up. Either
somebody's holding a pole with a green ball on the top, which I've learned is basically those are place markers for like CGI, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, because if you have the eye direction wrong, no one's going to believe the performance. I think there's going to be a lot more glowing in this film.
Think so?
Legolas is going to be around.
That's
wishful thinking on my part.
That you think Legolas and Glowin will have some kind of an interaction. We don't know what.
Doesn't he have like a family portrait in like a locket somewhere?
Well, that scene is in here, but I got to tell you, that locket, I don't think
we're ever going to see it.
No, I think it looks like it would be Bilbo holding it. Glowin's looking at somebody off screen and there's a hand holding it. But the picture in the locket is a clean shaven person. I'm thinking it's Bilbo holding a locket of like his father and mother or something. We'll get to it because it's in this. I actually looked at it when I was
I probably didn't even notice it that I put it in here. I'm just saying.
Well, I'll tell you, I'll be able to.
I just want more because we should be reminded that Gimli's dad is here since Legolas will be around. And
well, what's
BFS.
Stuck in my head is I rewatched Fellowship of the Ring, and I mean Gimli is really irascible about elves at the Council of Elrond. Now, Legolas is not. Legolas doesn't reply
he's
in
very
kind.
Animalistic in the beginning of the film.
Yeah, I mean, Gimli's really ticked off. I mean, he's like, you know, he's really like belligerent about the whole idea of elves even having the ring in their possession and everything like that. And so it's kind of, you know, and that matches the book, you know, I mean, in terms of.
Well, it is the elves' fault. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
It's all their fault.
But I just don't know how they're going to, because if we'd want to talk continuity just with Jackson, I mean, forget the Tolkien piece of it, but just with Jackson, you know, how are we going to build that up to where Gimli comes to the Council of Elrond being really belligerent?
Glowin's technically at the Council of Elrond, not in the movie, but...
Huh?
Glowin's technically at the Council of Elrond in the book, not that that really matters anymore.
Did Glowin and Gimli come together in the book?
Yeah, because... Frodo's like, you know Bilbo, you were friends with him. And he's like, I'm here because you know, Balin went to Moria, and I don't know he's dead yet. Foreshadowing.
That's right.
But it's gone. But I like to think he's sitting there, technically, in the shot. So we don't have that very much for Beorn, but the next big plot event that will happen in the movie is Gandalf needs to go away.
Right.
And what I don't think anyone's going to be able to hear this because I have a headset on. But
no, I didn't hear it, but I remember it's – what is mm-hmm. it? I assume it's Bilbo's voice saying, where are you going or something like that.
Yeah.
He said, I need Bilbo answers.
Gandalf replies, in search of answers after requesting a horse.
Right.
So I can only guess that this is him going off and having his – parallel storyline in the movie.
And Beorn's would be the only place he'd be able to get a horse, so it makes sense that it's here, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and why change it?
Cause and the only thing I can see on the camera is a figure standing, so I'm thinking they're shooting Bilbo's reaction piece, and they're not showing Gandalf actually riding out. I think this was production video 4. There is a lot in production video 4 of Mirkwood.
Oh, okay.
So we definitely
so
get
that's
it.
Good. So folks can go back and take a look at that if they want to.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how far he's going in, because I swear that I saw Gandalf in Mirkwood at one point. Where is it?
Yes, there is. There is a scene of Gandalf in Mirkwood, walking in Mirkwood. Now, whether that's when
alone
he's with company,
or later,
or whether it's when he's there. Oh, you just passed it.
Yeah, there it is.
Or whether that's he's approaching Dol Guldur, because he's by himself. There's no company around.
Yeah, it's hard to say. There seems to be pretty distinct sets of what we've seen in Mirkwood, because Mirkwood has to be divided up.
Right.
One of them is, the one that Gandalf is in, is this really brown, rooty trees.
Right.
Not the sticky, gooey ones that we're going to get to. And then lots of leaves, which there are lots of leaves like this near the Elven Halls. So I'm like, but maybe it's actually closer to Dol Guldur.
Wasn't Radagast kind of...
He was in a more grassy, happy area was experiencing death suddenly. This is definitely not a Mirkwood we've seen. Maybe this is him being shot alone because of size reference, because that's always going to be an issue.
But we also don't have him with them. In the book, he leaves before the company actually goes into Mirkwood. I don't know what'll happen. I'm assuming.
Well, technically, they are in Mirkwood when they're in Beorn's house in a way, but not really. So it's really hard. I don't know how far he's going to go in, And I would have thought that he left earlier. But something, based on that audio clip of him saying, in search of answers, and he suddenly needs to leave, but he hasn't told the company that he's going to leave, because technically he hasn't. In the book, he was always like, oh, I guess I'll leave sometime. But it seems like some event triggers Gandalf to have to leave in a hurry. And for him to need a horse, there would have to be somewhere nearby that actually has a horse. Not in the middle of Mirkwood, which would be Bjorn's house.
Yeah, that would be Bjorn. Well, that's why, in my mind, this is him being alone. In other words, he's left Bjorn's. He's gone to wherever he's gone, which maybe it was Lorien. Maybe he goes to Lorien to see Galadriel. I don't know. But then I would say that this might be a scene of him walking through Mirkwood on his way to Dol Guldur.
That's my best guess, because I don't see him ending up at like the elves' place just to hang out randomly at one point in the film. So that's my only guess. It's just the actual set dressing confuses me because it matches some other.
Yeah,
they might just be reusing something on a close up. Who knows? So based on the live event, what Pete was saying was that Mirkwood is primarily supposed to be a scary sequence, but at the same time, Mirkwood's supposed to be really grand. But it seems like it's not going to be, except in the sense of being big, and they're not going to focus too much on the magic aspect that you feel in the book, which is a shame, because that's, like, the one thing I really remember of the first time I read The Hobbit, is, like, how Mirkwood felt really weird.
Right.
And it was, like, the whole perilous realm thing, and I didn't understand what that was at the time. Now I do, but...
Yeah.
So it's... That's
I mean, I remember that, too, when I finally realized that's what it was, and I was like, whoa, that's really cool. And then for the movies, I'm thinking, he's not going to do that, probably, perilous realm stuff.
Even though the Enchanted Stream is there, it's not going to be like, oh, what's happening? There's magic in this world? I didn't even realize. I've been hanging off a hobbit and dwarfs this whole time, and just a crazy old guy who throws pine cones occasionally probably isn't even a real wizard, like when you're reading the book for the first time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, it's magic in the earth, and it really felt old. And I think the Enchanted Stream is just to me like something that's dangerous and inconvenient to the party.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, it'll have a different feel, I'm sure.
There's a lot of Mirkwood footage of just the set. As we go deeper into Mirkwood, we get the really saturated sets.
Yeah.
Because they're going to desaturate it on film. It's the only way to have the contrast come out, according to them.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Uh-huh. And something you know in terms of costumes. In early Mirkwood, we see Bilbo carrying a ton of provisions on his back.
Right.
And the others all have provisions, but Bilbo's are more distinct because he's smaller and he has these giant bottles, no doubt from Bjorn's house.
Honey. So I figured it's honey.
Honey in a bottle.
Yeah.
So he doesn't have them any of the other Mirkwood shots, so I was able to figure out what things were where based on what Bilbo was wearing at the time.
What he had, sure.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to get to the spot.
So he leaves Bjorn's with all those provisions, but he loses them along the way.
Yeah, because I think the reason why they're having such large provisions, besides the obvious of Bjorn's, is that when you see them, you're instantly reminded of them because they're so big. You can't not notice them. So as they have less and less food, it's going to be really obvious to the viewers.
Right.
And I think that desperation is definitely going to be communicated through that, and it appears that they're going to be in there for a long time, ignoring... There's some footage of, like, Martin Freeman holding a banana, and he's like, I think he has food, but he's wearing his set robe, which keeps him warm.
Raises his bow behind him.
We finally have food, hides banana.
Yeah, I'm assuming this coat he has on is actually not part of his costume.
No, because seeing the next shot where we actually see what it looks like, we have what I believe is deer. This is the deer. Uh-huh. I'm 100% positive it's the deer. Because
so Thorin is taking aim at the deer.
Mm-hmm. While Bilbo looks. Okay. And he doesn't have the banana or set robe, which he wears, I guess, because the set's probably cold.
Right.
So you can tell what things are rehearsals based on when Martin Freeman's wearing this robe. But we do see, this is production video. This isn't even live event stuff. Which goes more into the elven part of Mirkwood, but we definitely see Thorin shooting a bow at something, probably when the provisions are starting to get low. And it's actually, it was one of the promotional skills, and I completely forgot about this. It's like, why would he be shooting a bow?
He
always makes Feely shoot the bow.
That's right. Yeah, no, that's a good catch. Yeah, they did a lot more of the Mirkwood stuff in the production videos. I mean, it's definitely mm-hmm. worthwhile. I'm glad you went back and.
Yeah, and, I'm glad I wasted that. Time doing that too.
And now we have the scene that we talked about at some length. I remember we talked about it on one.
You were
of the
really excited about
episodes
it,
where they were. Correctly. Yeah, I was really excited about the black butterflies, and so now we've mm-hmm. got the scene where Bilbo is at the top of the trees, and I assume those little white dots are going to turn into black butterflies in post-production.
I think those white dots might be on the wall, and they might just be to gauge what the wall size is for perspective and when you put the planes there. They wouldn't have markers for the butterflies. I believe the butterflies. I believe in them. They will be there.
Well, I've seen a picture of them. I've seen a photo of
I wonder if that's photoshopped, honestly.
Oh, yeah, somebody might have photoshopped it. Yeah, that's true.
I don't think it was an official poster. I think it might have been a fan poster because it wasn't a really clear image. Yeah. But I'm not 100.
I'd be so sad if there aren't black butterflies.
Yeah.
Anyway, but this is still a cool scene. And they have a wind machine going, so his hair is being blown back. And
the need to have this scene is because they are lost and they're starving. So if that's the same reason, like, the problem with automatically assuming that is that it is a visual scene. Mm-hmm. And it will make good visuals. But I think it would definitely be like if they failed to get the deer, they would have to send Bilbo up.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. In the live event, and most people, if they're on Tumblr and stuff, probably have seen this stuff because it's some of the first stuff that went up, and Warner Brothers can't take Tumblr stuff down because once something's been reblogged, it is a copy on every single blog it's posted on. They're just how I watch most of the stuff. But we got some concept art with even more confirmation of the stream. We actually see it. There used to be a bridge there, so it's really different than what I remembered. It looks more like a swamp. We also see just the scale of the trees. It really feels like the forest isn't trees, but a bunch of paths under roots that are above ground, and they're really tall roots, so it seems like the roots themselves are trees, just sideways.
Right, just sideways, yeah.
So I think you can probably find these, but I'm describing them because we can't post a lot of this
but
stuff.
It is really amazing. It's the impression that I got when I looked at this is kind of like the reverse Lothlorien. You know how in the Fellowship of the Ring we had
everything's really vertical
going up. Yeah, everything was vertical.
Yeah, everything's in really this, horizontal like and sharp.
Roots.
Here.
Yeah, and we're talking tree. You know, it's tree roots are really predominant. You know,
we should have spotted Bomber a lot earlier. I remember it took us a really long time for us to even see it
until ages, and then I saw this. I'm like, oh my god, there's actually
it was earlier on in the one of the early production videos before the still of them carrying it. It was there, and I was like, how did we not notice this? And then I was like, we have to go back over. So
yes. So we're thinking, so I know some people have, and I don't know if you're one of them, they've been thinking about at the point in time when the whole deer thing happens and Thorin mm-hmm. misses it is a point in time when Bomber falls in the stream. Or I know there is a mm-hmm. scene where they have to cross. It's like in the book. They have to cross the stream with a boat. You know, the bridge, there's no bridge.
Uh-huh.
So they may actually do the scene much more similar to what it was in the book in terms of Bomber falling in.
Yeah, and the deer scene's really useful on a lot of levels. I always write little blogs to go with each riddle so I can think it out and not be like swayed by you guys and you're like pick this answer.
Especially Corey.
No, see, you know what the thing is with Corey. He's saying stuff. I'm like, I agree, but then he says, so that's why I'm picking this. I'm like, no, you should pick something else based on that conclusion. So I'm like, yeah. So I usually try to go on like gut reaction.
It is funny.
Like,
he surprised me a couple of times. I wonder what the guy's like in Vegas. You know, it's like, oh well, you know, there's been four kings show up so far, so I'm gonna.
He makes me question like too many things. I'm like, I need to not answer for a few days. I need to reassess this without this influence because he's just using his long, teachery words. So I think they're right because he's a teacher and he sounds like a teacher and the teacher's right.
Yeah, right.
He's on the test.
That's right. He's got that authoritative. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
That's funny.
I'm like, no. But that's usually when I'm like, I'm not picking
that.
Must resist. You all three kind of do it like it's really funny because like you'll say an analysis, but then you'll pick an answer that's completely different than like even if I agree with the analysis, I'm like wait. So I think it's really interesting how people think that way, but it's getting off track. The thing with the Bomber, it could be anywhere. You don't really see Bilbo in the shot, so I can't see if he still has provisions or not, which they probably ditched if they were completely empty.
That's right. Yes, so actually, yeah, that's right. So we've got one now with them actually carrying him. Now we've got a scene where they're kind of looking around, and we still don't see Bilbo in this, but we also don't see Bomber in this shot. Mm-hmm.
I think this might be before they send him up the...
Oh, that's Bilbo right there, I think.
Yeah, but I'm not official. I don't know the order. I could have put these all in wrong order.
No, that's right. And this might be before they send him up. This might be just before they send him up the tree.
Keeley has some figs or plants in a pouch on his back. They all have provisions on them.
Okay.
But the fact that Keeley and Peely are on a log looking where to go, and this is really long, and it's not behind the scenes. Well, it is, but it's not just them standing around the set. They're acting. They all have provisions. It's probably once they get in work.
Oh, yeah,
it's got to
be early on, because I can see Bilbo's got his bottle.
Yeah, they all have a lot of food on them.
Yeah. What's his face with the star hairdo's got the
Nori, I think.
Okay. Yeah.
So they all have all the provisions.
This probably is pretty early on, like you said, probably early on. Is that a bollard? It almost looks like a bollard there. Oh, no, that's a dwarf. Never mind.
I don't even know what you were looking at. I don't even know.
It's a body of a dwarf. I was thinking it was like a post of a human.
Oh,
really,
I think
you're talking.
I think that's Thorin. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's right, the guy right behind
that's definitely, yeah. But this is a really long scene.
Oh, I see.
Because since it's not them standing around a set and they're all talking, so it's definitely a long dialogue scene.
Right, right. Oh, I see Bomber. I see
probably Bomber's giving us all the exposition to set up the problem of them eventually starving. And I think that's the direction they're going, because if they have the deer can be used in multiple ways. It can be used to emphasize that they're starving. It could be to build up suspense, only to turn it around and be like, oh, it's just a deer. Oh, wait, we missed it. This sucks. But then later, oh, it's probably a deer. Oh, wait, it's a spider now. So it's kind of a reversal on suspense building. So they could use it that way. And it really would be a scene that would be less than a minute, less than a page, and it could be used really efficiently, I think. So it's another reason to really include it. Going through Mirkwood. To the spiders now. Let's get to the spiders.
Ah, now to the spiders.
Like, the concept art that everyone has seen, the 3D one that John Howe and Alan Lee did, it's exactly the type of shot I would want. Because it reminds me of the shot of Shelob crawling over Frodo before it stings him, and they don't know it's there, so it could, that suspense thing I was talking about. I don't know how they're going to get caught. We have a clip of Bilbo saying, "Get back."
He's not saying Addercop in this thing, but we're holding out for him to say it.
I saw that it was the title of the digest. I haven't watched it yet that you guys just posted. I have no idea.
It's funny. The conundrum is, will Addercop or Tom Noddy be said?
I had to talk
Laura into that, because Laura wanted
probably
both
not,
of them.
But I'll wait to listen first before I
We
I
both
say
said
anything.
Yes, just because we want it to be so.
Yeah, I try not to do
which I know is... that's why you win and we don't. See, I mean,
I also prepared myself to hate the movie, which I kind of did. Because I think even though it was a good adaptation of the book, I didn't like it as a movie, and I thought it was really ugly. But I really like the Lord of the Rings films, which aren't true, so what the heck is wrong with me?
Yeah. I know.
Probably because I have a bigger memory of the films than the books, because they came out when I was 11. I'm 24.
Yeah, you're more
discerning. It's been a while. The spider scene, we have no idea how the capture happens. The dwarves are definitely elevated in these films to the point where we don't think they'll be captured as easily. But at the same time, the troll incident happened. But that was only because Bilbo was in danger.
So it's
something we've seen in films here. It could be that they went to sleep. It really could be as easy as that, because that's what happens. Bilbo wakes up, apparently, if that's the case. And we see him struggling in the web. And we know he breaks free and will go after them with Sting.
Right.
And as for all the dwarves, Thorin is definitely there among them, because you can see him in the web when they take a picture on the set, which I believe was in the live event a little more clearly. He's in the back, like behind Pete's head.
Right.
That's him. It's funny how I can recognize them in their blurry forms now.
They're all, everybody's got, they're still got the spider webs on, but they look kind of like mummies. that have taken their bandages off their faces.
Yeah, probably just referee.
This is it. Okay, this is the scene. So look at that. That is that picture of that person in
that
thing that. does not have a beard. I think
that's not his hand either.
Bilbo holding
that's a really
that.
Weird moment.
It's just a weird moment. Here we've got Glowin covered in
Don't they have
spider
bigger
web.
Priorities?
I know, looking at whoever's holding this locket, it actually didn't even look like a locket, it looks like a picture frame, doesn't it?
And this shot is
a double
from...
picture frame. So it's a double frame, so I'm assuming there's like a dad on one side and a mom on the other side is what I always thought. But it doesn't, it looks like it's hobbits, not dwarves.
Yeah, it's drawn the style of the hobbits, and but the casing could be dwarven, it's hard to tell. The shot, by the way, is from the second official trailer, I believe, and it's when we have the names all around of each dwarf, and it's on the Glowin shot.
Right, right. This is where we see Glowin. Yeah.
Why would he shoot down a picture now of all times? I don't understand what I'm just gonna ignore it.
Obviously post spider. Now it could be, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be at the spider thing because they're still covered with spider webs when they're in Thranduil's hall.
I would say this is after they've escaped the spiders, and well, at least out of the webbing because it's in their beards. Right. They haven't had time to take it out.
But I mean, you know, what are we stopping? And what is Bilbo telling him a story about his mom and dad or something? I don't know. It's just weird.
Maybe those are elven hands, and maybe he's. I have a family. No, that's so stupid. I can't even imagine.
If this is out in the woods, why would somebody be carrying a double frame, silver frame? I mean, it looks like about a 5x7.
It can't be Bilbo, because Bilbo didn't bring anything. Wait, he brought a backpack, didn't
he?
Right. Dang it.
Well, he did bring a backpack, but here's
the
other thing.
Didn't he have a backpack?
But why would this come out now? I mean, you know, you'd think that there would have been a foreshadow of him, like, you know, grabbing a picture off the mantle, you know, when he went running for Bag End, I don't know. It's a mystery.
I don't know.
It's really odd. It's like, this is going to be one of, if they keep it in the movie, I'm going to be really curious to see the rest of this scene.
And I believe that the next thing we're looking at is the dwarves in viney trees.
Okay.
The only reason is, obviously, the spiders. It has to be the spiders. It can't be anything else. Because they are fighting. They're in danger. It's more action-y. The vines are all moving.
Right.
The need to climb up, but I forgot what I was going to say completely. I don't remember.
Who are we seeing there? It looks like, is that Glowin?
Yeah, he seems to be in a lot of these, but who knows if the camera's actually looking at him.
Yeah,
I hope he's
doing his axe thing.
He has lines in the book.
I know.
He deserves to speak. I don't know, did he talk at all in the first movie?
I think Balin was the only one that actually did much talk. Well, they talked, at the
Bag End.
Unexpected party, yeah, but then it was basically Balin after that.
So we know that the dwarves eventually during the fight will get into the trees and start fighting back, and it's lots of green screen, so they will probably have some spiders put in. But we also have a shot, and this is from the live event. It's during the sizzle reel at the very last, like, 2 minutes, and Bilbo falls on a tree, which is highly saturated paint job. It has to be, it matches the trees that they were just in. He's in a tree, and he has spider webs on his clothes, and he's catching the ring, which appears to have fallen out of his pocket.
Which we assume is going to jump on his hand, a la Frodo, a la
they've only done it
Riddles in the
how
Dark.
Many times now?
I know. It's an iconic thing now. But this is what's weird. He's catching it. I mean, why isn't he just putting it on?
I think maybe it fell off during the battle. Or it could, that's one option. Or he could have forgotten that he had it, and this is when he gets out of the webbing and he thinks they use it.
Right.
Either way, this is an important ring moment because it's definitely a close-up. Like, I think this is actual unedited footage. This is the camera because it's way too close to be behind the scenes I think it's really emphasized. Bilbo's looking at it and his hand, it's just a focal point, you know, all that junk. So I think this is... It could be when he reveals that he has the ring, too, to the dwarves. Like, around the time. It could be, like, a setup for that. And it could happen in the next shot, who knows. Or maybe when the dwarf sees him, puts it on. Who knows? But we're definitely getting a ring moment in the spider sequence. It's not forgotten.
I'm wondering about.
We're not even making a dent yet. And then from some earlier production videos, we see all the dwarves running out, Sauron in the lead. They're covered in web. This part's interesting, though, because it seems like they're looking all around, and they're all together now. They're out of the trees, and I don't think this is the spiders. I think this is the elves they're running from, because they hear the elves coming, and they're looking. I don't know why I think this, but they run along, and they definitely feel like they're being herded or cattled, if that's the right term, because we have a few different shots of them running through the trees and trying to get away. That's them playing around the set. And then you have the shot of Bomber. I can't remember where it's from. I think it's a production video. And he obviously is awake now. I want to say that he's had the elven dreams, which would be interesting to have him notice the elves first, maybe. He's walking towards the camera, and he seems to be very trance-like. He's not really making expression. He's walking slowly. The film camera view we have is a 3D thing, but we can still guess the composition of the shot. So since it's a closer shot, we're supposed to read his expression more. So I think maybe he's noticed the elves. Or maybe he has some sort of intuition to notice them first, which would be nice. But then we see all the dwarves hiding on this tree. And I wonder if they're trying to hide from the elves or something. But I don't see that many spider webs at this point. But if they're on the trees. So yeah, it could be that. Because they're all awake now. They're all together. I don't see Bilbo anywhere in these shots, by the way.
Right.
But the elves are going to get them anyway, as we know. Because we have some concept art from the older videos of the halls, but we got a lot of new concept art in the live event. Basically confirming one of the riddles that it's going to be divided, because we have the bridge, which we saw on the scroll. It looks nothing like what it actually looks like in the film.
I know!
It's much smaller, but it's a narrow bridge over a waterfall of the river.
Unless there's another bridge to this
No, they said this is the only way in the live event. They said this is the one way in. Yeah. It's supposed to be impregnable, despite there not being gates. It's just a narrow bridge. Okay, impregnable, whatever. But it's the only entrance into the halls. We see a few pillars, an elf standing there, and then we kind of see further down into the rock. And the bridge goes over what I assume is the river, but it's more of a roaring, rocky spot of the river. Probably the source of possibly like where it comes down from the mountains finally and starts to get flat. Not that that's important at all, I just like geography. Yeah, I know. So one riddle answered, or at least half of a riddle answered.
Yeah, right.
You guys made so many part twos. There's going to be lots of half points this year.
Oh, gosh.
And we get inside. We also have concept art of inside.
This is actually what I was talking about with regard to being like the reverse Lothlorien.
Oh, yeah. Because it's in the roots.
We're like in caves, and it's almost like tree roots now instead of tree tops. You know, that these elves are living in tree roots. It's interesting.
Hmm. I mean, I like it. I like it, what it looks like.
Find it really interesting. It's an interesting distinction, you know, because that's, I mean, for me, this is Jackson's way of sort of differentiating these elves from especially the Lothlorien elves.
Mm-hmm.
Rivendell kind of has its own thing anyway. So, I mean, I just think it's, I like it. I mean, I don't have a problem with it at all. And besides which, I mean, we really do know that, you know, Thranduil's Hall is more of a Minagroth type
setup anyway.
But
the thing is, the reason why I like it is because it's not like Minagroth in my mind. Because Minagroth, I would think here is much more, I like that it's distinguished from my Minagroth, if that makes sense, even though it's completely irrelevant to any film, because there is no Minagroth in film. At least not yet, until I get to it. I want to make that movie. I want it to be mine. Minagroth, I would picture more orderly.
I've always seen Minagroth as being much more caves. You know,
yeah,
not
much more
roots.
Cave and more root.
Yeah,
so I think root is really appropriate for Mirkwood.
Yeah.
Because it's more rooty. It's pillars carved out of the roots. Staircases are very unorganized. They're based on whatever the root's going to get to places.
Right.
I really hope nobody ever falls off of these stairs because it's a bottomless pit under them
That's why I'm just so fascinated. I mean, I think it's such a brilliant move because it does make you think, it makes me think anyway, of Jackson's portrayal of Lothlorien, you know, with the stairs going up the tree trunks. Same thing, you know, geez, I hope nobody falls off. And this is sort of, you know, thematically similar in that we're talking about a living tree, you know.
Yeah,
but
it feels like we're inside of a really big tree rather than a cave.
Yeah.
It's probably water underneath of a river, if it's anything. But
I think it's a smart thing. It kind of knits them together, but definitely makes it a different thing. I like
it. Oh, I just thought it was something really corny. It'd be nice if the dwarves nice caves. Like these caves. We don't want to approve publicly, but we'll make some nods of our heads. I mean, that's a nice rock structure of light coming down in this concept art picture.
Yeah,
that's a nice rock fixture.
Interesting to see what that is.
I think it's just the lit light and whatnot. Okay, so moving on to the actual elves in the Elven Hall, we have.
Okay, now I have a question here.
Walking.
We have them walking. Is that Legolas beside Toriel? Or
yeah,
is that...
he's in the front.
Okay, so Toriel, because they both stop now as we proceed with the scene, they both stop and kind of guard the entrance.
Yeah, they're definitely the leaders of the group. They're definitely portrayed as having authority. Toriel definitely doesn't have as much authority as Legolas, but she's a very high-ranking officer based on what we've seen, and I guess she would have to be. And we see that they go through the narrow bridge that they're on into Mirkwood. And the elves are escorting the tied-up dwarves, and Thorin is in front with dwarves behind him, so captured at the same time. And they're led to Sandril, who says something.
And what a throne, boy. Wow.
He says, it's been a long time since Thorin Oakenshield has traveled so far east.
It has been a long time since Thorin Oakenshield traveled so far east. For what purpose?
That's the really only clear piece of dialogue we get from him, besides some Elvish and the word North that I can't hear because Pete is talking over him, which I'm like, stop talking over him. I want to hear. But yeah. So they're all let in. Sandril is completely fabulous because he's exactly what I wanted. Me and my roommate from college, we love Sandril. Okay, we love it because of all the inside jokes we came up with for him. And for the longest time, we're like, he's like, he should definitely be a David Bowie-esque Labyrinth figure with a mix of Malfoy, Jason Isaacs, and that's exactly what he is.
Oh my gosh! I mean,
yes.
It's like they read your mind. Because that's just what he is. I mean, he reminds me, you know, it is like Labyrinth and, you know, he's the child of Lucius Malfoy and the guy in Labyrinth.
Yeah, it's amazing. And we made jokes all the time in college about how Legolas would have to get timed out for letting the dwarves escape. Because we always used to make fun that he would be the wine guy, which is completely impossible because of the extended edition of Two Towers. But still, it was fun times. I lucked out with that roommate.
Really?
I was like, oh my god, you know who Glorfindel is. That was like our favorite. We're like, yes, yes. And we would talk about how it was poetic that he got pulled by his own golden hair into a pit. So yeah, I definitely lucked out. It's weird to me that he has an antler thrown. This is definitely live footage, not early production footage.
Right.
Because if he rides an elk, he put a dead giant elk from the past on his throne. So is
don't
he threatened with the elk?
They shed their antlers, don't they?
I have no idea. But whoever shed this was like, did Orme ride on this elk? Because
no, I figured it's a composite of multiple elk antlers.
I kind of like the Orme idea. Be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy, ridiculous, big.
But Orme didn't ride an elk, did he? He rode of course, in Jackson's Middle Earth. Who knows what Orme rode?
Who knows? I just don't know what else would be that big.
Yeah.
It's a ridiculous little thing that I just thought of 2 seconds ago.
Or it could have been like his favorite elk that died, and he made a throne out of him.
I love this elk, and then the dwarves killed it, so I got a new one.
I love this. That's right. I love this elk. That's
he
right.
seems that, to have would, cloth under him. Is that what I'm seeing? Like a robe going under from the throne down?
Yeah, that's what it looks
on
like.
On the close-up shot, you can see the red, and he's not wearing... I think that might be the robe he wears later, or maybe it's just his special throne blanket. That he
just
like
a carriage blanket.
It's ridiculously long. I don't think he can walk in it. But it's definitely red in color.
Or his mantle. Yeah, it probably is his mantle, I'll bet.
And he's really high up above the others.
But he doesn't keep it on, right? Yeah, because when he's down talking, when he's confronting Thorin at an interesting eye-to-eye level, which I still have a problem with this.
Yeah, maybe that he's going to be on his knees in the actual shot, and during rehearsals he just hurt after a while of being on your knees, because I don't know what else.
Or the other is that they do like they did in the other shots and have Thranduil up on a higher area.
Or maybe he's on a box. Someone got him a box.
That's what they did when Gandalf and Thorin were talking, just before the troll scene. Gandalf was actually, McKellen was actually up on a stage, so that Thorin was lower than him. Maybe they'll do that. This is probably
rehearsal. Or Legolas got Thorin a box.
Oh, and put it in.
Because he never got Gimli one. He might as well get Thorin one.
Yeah, I don't know that any of the elves would do that with Thranduil being the way he is. He's such a snarky king.
Yeah, why would you raise up the dwarf?
Yeah, you wouldn't. So,
weird.
This is going to be an interesting scene to actually see when we actually see it. I'm sure
if anyone can decide what he's saying, that'd be useful. because he's definitely, I can't read lips. If you can read lips, please contact me. He says north. That's all I know. So maybe he's saying he owns the north and the dwarves don't own it anymore.
We can tell by the body language he's very belligerent.
Mm-hmm. He's very in charge. He's acting like a bird of prey. He's like, his arms are behind him. His face is forward.
Yeah.
So it's definitely like in control. He's looking down on him even though Thorin has box.
Belligerent. Yeah.
Like
and Thorin looks like he's holding in his temper.
Yeah. He definitely doesn't want to tell him why he's actually there. He seems a lot calmer than I would expect him to be, actually.
You can see the dwarves in this scene. You can see they still have their spider webs on them.
Mm-hmm. I think what's really interesting about the scene, besides Toriel and Legolas giving each other eyebrows, which I feel is like could be a whole movie. So many, just a bunch of eyebrow raises. I can see a YouTube compilation coming of what might happen in this
movie. Just eyebrows. I know. I noticed this a couple of times with the two of them.
I think what's really interesting
is are we going to be inferring that there's something between them more than just professional...
The fandom people will. There will be fan art if it doesn't already exist. It's unavoidable. It will happen because Tumblr ships anything that walks.
Well, and I don't see any reason why not. It just means to me she's going to get offed in the Battle of Five Armies.
Who knows if she will. I'm not 100% sure yet. But that's a riddle for film 3.
That's right.
Will Toriel die? But what's interesting about this is Glóin, looks at her. And she definitely smiles.
Oh, she does. You're right.
She seems very pleased at the dwarves. Maybe she's trying to be polite. Maybe she's seen Keely. Who knows? But she's definitely very positive compared to the others. Legolas seems to be skeptical and kind of amused with that eyebrow raise that he makes to her when they're late. Because this is actually, it has to be when...
I think they're escorting them to their dungeons.
After the king has already left. So.
Right.
And... if anyone can speak Elvish, this would all be nice if you see the live thing, because Toriel says something to Legolas, and I can only describe the tone of what she's saying. She seems really relaxed and just like, oh, la 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 la.
Udanlana. Eorhal.
It sounds like that, but Elvish words that actually exist.
That he's skeptical or, you know, he's questioned her or something.
And we got a lot of Toriel in the live event video.
Yeah, so kind of I don't know what's up with
this. It can't be a secret conversation they're having about breaking the dwarves out if anyone is jumping to crazy conclusions for that. Because there's a guard.
There's a guard.
And Balin is right there in the
dungeon. Oh, and there's Balin.
Dungeon.
Yeah,
he's
the dungeon.
Like, I'm going to eavesdrop. That's his entire
That's
plan.
Right, he's in his dungeon.
Mm-hmm. And it should be noted
that... this is interesting.
Mm-hmm. It should be noted that Legolas has two main costumes. Based on the footage we've seen, he has the heavy armor, which is what he comes in early Mirkwood. But later, he's not going to have it, and that's mainly in the orc fight. And I have a really, really good theory that you'll enjoy about how the orc fight happens, but we'll get to that.
Oh, he's got his quiver. That's his
mm-hmm.
He's got his arrow.
And then she walks away, totally in charge of whatever conversation was.
And that's another thing that I'm like, okay, there's something going on between these two.
He seems to be... I think Legolas, based on this, seems to be a middle between Toriel and
Thranduil.
Sandril. But at the same time, during the interrogation scene, which was shown in the video that was put on Peter Jackson's YouTube without the sound, we actually get the sound in the video.
Well,
and
so
here,
now we have Thranduil
he has the
with
red,
his
robe.
Red mantle on. Yeah, yeah.
It feels like a more relaxed position.
And he's
so
not
I wonder
his
if this
crown.
Is. Yeah, I wonder if this is much later. Maybe at night, and they found an orc scout before the orc battle. And Legolas is like, we should have gotten more out of him. And this is probably why the fight's going to happen, and they're not going to be ready for it, because they should have interrogated more, which means Legolas is right about whatever argument we're having between them.
I get the impression that, you know, Toriel basically threatens to kill the orc, but Legolas stops her. But then I got the impression that the subsequent conversation, when he says we could have gotten more out of him, and Thranduil says, I got enough, I got the impression that Thranduil must have killed the orc.
It seems like he's in charge of the order. I think what's going on here is you have to be reminded that Sandril's the one in charge. And he's like, because it doesn't sound like Legolas is telling her to stop. Because someone shouts, Toriel, and it sounds like Lipes.
You like killing things, Orc. You like death? Then let me give it to you.
First, Toriel.
He's like, don't kill him just yet. I give the order. Not you.
I'm thinking Thranduil probably kills because he's got that wicked-looking sword on.
Oh, yeah, and he has it out later when he swings it around in a wonderful fashion.
Right.
Yeah, right here.
Oh, yeah, there he is, yeah. And that's right. This is the scene where he goes, where Legolas says, we could have gotten more out of him, and Thranduil says, I got...
There was nothing more you could tell me.
There was more the orc could tell us.
There was nothing more he could tell me.
That's what he says, right. And you can see an elvish guard down in the bottom, hanging out.
Right.
Just the fact that there's tension through this. It's not even the dwarves. There's tension right. In other ways. And this, I think it has to be an orc scout. I don't know why else they would just have a single orc, why they would capture one to begin with.
Right.
The elves
right.
would just kill an orc. You wouldn't pity an orc, you know?
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, you know, we've already had Bjorn doing an interrogation with an orc, so I could see it this also being a similar.
Yeah, there's a lot of orc interrogation going on in general.
Yeah.
Then another sequence we saw in the live event shows Legolas coming to Sandor again, similar framing of the camera, but instead, Legolas isn't wearing the heavy armor anymore. Sandor's dressed up in his king garb, like full-on king garb. And I've come to the conclusion in my head that we are witnessing trouble at a time of festival, because we're all forgetting the most important clue of all. Sandor knows how to throw a party.
Oh, right.
Like, we're not getting the feast. I've completely abandoned the idea of the feast, because I don't think we have any room for it. But apparently he knows how to throw a party, which I love that it was like the first thing we ever got of him, was the picture in that description of the little bio.
Which is also going to be the timing for the escape will be during their feast.
Yeah, so I guess staffing issues one. I don't know. So I think there's going to be a feast, and they're not going to be wearing heavy armor, because when we see the orc battle after this, and I'm not sure if this conversation is after the battle saying, oh, they got away, and he's disappointed, or the dwarfs seem to be gone. Oh, we can't do it right now. The orc. It could be anywhere.
Right.
But the battle definitely has Legolas not wearing heavy armor, which implies that this happened immediately, and they weren't aware of it, because they didn't get enough information from that orc scout. And because Legolas is not wearing the heavy armor. We see Toriel being thrown a bow. She wasn't already armed. So this was a surprise attack. And they're completely caught off guard, because they have not learned their lesson to have guards out during times of festival yet, despite how many years has it been since, you know, the Cimmerils? I don't know. I love the idea that a festival thing might happen, because I love that running joke.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. That's the answer. So we see them fighting a progression through a few different sets. We see more ruiny areas up on Tree Root, which seems to be right outside of Mirkwood. I mean, not outside of Mirkwood, but outside of the caves. Because we definitely see, like, a bridge structure under and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then it progresses down in it from these ruin areas, through some trees, through the ruin areas.
I swear it looks like Legolas is wearing something with a zipper. It looks like a spandex athletic suit.
The really tight sewing line. But it goes down from the more elven structure to these rocky slopes.
So now they're fighting orcs, definitely. Mm-hmm.
And they're definitely the same style orcs that we see in film one. They don't match any other orc design of the Lord of the Rings film. So they're definitely dwarves. Dividing dwarves and orcs together. I don't even know. I don't know what I'm doing anymore.
That's kind of a scary thought. This strikes me. This could be Dol Guldur.
I think they're under Azog, and part of the live event we got that motion capture of Azog apparently commanding from afar, and he gets mad at an orc who shot a bow at one of them and apparently was missing because Azog kicks him while he's down. It's just a lot of battle footage in general of this apparent orc battle, because I guess they're trying to add something in the middle or something. I don't really know. It's definitely a new addition. I have no idea what Legolas is doing at this part right here that I'm on.
I'm assuming I don't know. Yeah, it could be a tree branch that he's supposed to be standing on.
I have no idea. What we're looking at, for you audio people, which is everyone but us, is a green screen, two guys in green screen suits, moving poles that Legolas is standing on. So I don't know what sort of sled action is happening here, but it's definitely in the battle while he's shooting, and he appears to be bouncing on these moving things. Maybe stones that are moving under him?
Oh, it could be in the water. That's true.
I have no idea. It's really weird. But it's just it's not a lot of revealing things. It's just elves fighting and showing off Toriel's moveset. But it moves down from the rocks after the ruins into a more level area. which might be closer to a river based on the slope of the land and how it's less starting to become a little less rocky and smoother. All the guys playing orcs are wearing green head things because I guess they're going to get shot in the head and they're having CG heads.
Yeah, I figure they're going to get nasty CG heads. Toriel doing all kinds of
she's cool doing crazy stuff.
Pretty soon we've got the steel coming up. Oh, there he is. He slides.
Oh,
so
yeah,
we don't get him shield surfing, but we get him sliding.
Specifically a slip and slide down into the river to have some fun times with the dwarves and the barrel ride. So Legolas is going to be doing tons of crazy stuff, apparently, in this fight. Toriel's doing more cool stuff, but Legolas is doing ridiculous stuff. But the fact that it's sloping down, it seems, from the Elven Halls to maybe a more river area seems like they're also chasing the orcs. I mean, the dwarfs at the same time as they're trying to get through this orc raid, which has come unexpectedly because Azog must be commanding them.
I have no notion
of Bolg anywhere, though. All the Bolg stuff seems to be because the promotional pictures have that set behind him, but I don't know if he's going to venture further out. I guess if Gandalf got there later.
I think he's going to be a Dagaldur, and that's it. And I'm, you know, some people are questioning whether he's even going to be in the movie, but I just have a hard time believing that having.
They made a toy of him. Come on.
Yeah,
people.
Well, that's the thing. And I mean, yes, he was taking the place of Azog because Azog wasn't done yet, you know, and all that stuff. But you can't do a poster and a toy of him and then not have him be something.
Anything at all. You know? Especially since it was so late in the game. That joke reel of the. I can't remember the actor's name. But shorter actor, where he was wearing the Legolas
wig. One of the doubles,
frivolous.
He's like, I want to be Legolas's. Yeah.
Yeah, it was fantastic when they added it in. But I think it's actually useful because they used whatever camera setup was already going. They weren't going to make an original camera setup, and it's the set, so we kind of get a sense of what the lighting might be in that scene. And it's definitely darker. It could help later when we get more information, but something to remember. Then we get the actual backtracking, possibly, because I think the dwarves are definitely using this as an excuse to get out. I mean, Bilbo's overhearing things, possibly.
So are we thinking that this scene where they're all lined up is when they're escaping?
Yeah, I mean, they've been de-weaponed and de-robed. Right. They're wearing basically long underwear.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And the rock structure matches the elven thing. The gate matches a gate we've seen previously. You can see some vine work carved in the rock along the gate. So this is definitely elves. Someone drinking? No, I don't know.
And then we
have the barrels.
Yeah, in the wine cellar.
John Howland, silly. I love John Howland so much. The wine cellar, it looks pretty much what I pictured it to be.
It just irritates Corey that they're wine barrels.
Yeah.
Because in the book, they're not. In the book, they're food barrels.
It's based on, like, kind of what you remember. But
now, here we go. So here is production video. I guess he looks like he's leveraging the entire set of barrels.
There seems to be a trap door and a lever that Bilbo pushes, and the trap door opens.
Right.
With all the dwarfs in it, and it's about to go down in one of the shots.
Right.
And I think some of this is live footage, while some of it is mixed with older production. But what's interesting about the orc is, I mean, I keep mixing dwarf and orc. I don't know what my time is, but I keep mixing them up, which is completely ridiculous. We have the wild and crazy water ride amusement park.
I was going to say, this is something else that's going to show up at the Warner Brothers, you know, Hobbit environment at Universal Studios, is the barrel ride.
Dude, that would be awesome. I don't even care if it would make him real in his
grave.
I saw
this and I'm like, this is so totally an amusement park ride.
It is, because they literally had to build an amusement park ride on this green screen set for the barrels.
Yeah.
The more rocky green screen part of it, which I think isn't... This is a live event, is that they had to make the set, make it more green screen. It's more tight-knit. The rocks match the edge of the last progression of the orc battle a little more. Definitely, I think, when they first come out, because the water's rougher, which would match the concept art of the waterfall near the Elven Gate. But the shot that really does it for me, which is definitely from the live event and not a lot of people have seen, is Thorin somehow has orc wrist. Because he has a sword, which can only be one sword, because I don't think they're going to throw orc wrist away.
I wonder how he gets orc wrist back. We're assuming he got it. I'm assuming he got taken away from him, right?
Yeah, I mean, now the dwarves have weapons. They don't have armor anymore. They're all in long pajamas. Right. And why would he have a sword out
while he's in a barrel, challenging something on shore. Maybe the orcs made it that far after them, and the elves see them escaping through this way, and we sort of see them going down the river. So you have these three parties converging, I think, that's going to happen during the escape. And then a lot of older projection videos, which have the dwarves in the river on location.
They have to put them into barrels, and then they float them down the river, and then they take them back out of barrels. Mm-hmm.
We see them paddling along on the river. Yeah. The river must have slowed down from the more rapid currents that are at the Elven port, and the water's more shallow. And we see the orcs. My God, I did it again! Oh my, what's wrong with me? The dwarves! I don't know, I apologize. We see them come on shore, not in Lake Town. I don't know why I didn't notice this before. This is definitely
But I don't know that this is part of the movie. I mean, I get the sense
that
this is
I think it is.
They've stopped their filming for the day and they're pulling everybody out.
You know, I really think it is because we see them sort of acting in some of the shots while most of it is set and they have to remove them because we see this shot of Feely on the same shore. This is definitely filming of them out of the barrels. Mm-hmm. It is a filming sequence. And they're grabbing for a rock, maybe, and they're looking up. And then it hit me when I saw this, based on the live event footage. It has
Bard.
To be Bard that they're reacting to, because he says, let me listen. He says, now that will get you killed.
Now that would get you killed.
After changing his target from one direction to another. So maybe he was looking at Thorin, the leader, but then saw Feely and Keely kind of scrambling like that.
Right.
Then it kind of sends him a warning shot, which gives us an example of his prowess. And they're definitely completely powerless in the next shot. We see Feely and Keely on the river looking up. They're no longer struggling. And this was a seamless footage that I just stuck it in the middle of. So that was definitely the correct order based on the production. So it seems that Bard meets them way further up the river than originally planned. Which is interesting. And we see them on the lake with the ice.
Yeah, because I'm trying to figure out how they... Well, why are there barrels on his boat unless he had...
I mean, maybe it's just his job to get the barrels. And he brings a bow because, you know, there are orcs about. Because
he's going to pick up the... Well, maybe it's his job to pick the barrels up when they come down from the Elven Kingdom. Yeah,
maybe he's the guy who does it. I mean, someone has to do it.
Yeah. Also, I remember now that in the scene you're about to show...
Which is the live event that everyone talked about.
Keely talks about him having an orc wound, which I couldn't figure out how he would have gotten an orc wound. But now that you've put this together and we have the... you know, it could very well be that Tauriel and Legolas are fighting the orcs on the shores of the river while the dwarves are actually traveling
And they just don't get to the dwarves in time because the orcs slow them down.
Which would mean that Legolas and Tauriel would actually know about the dwarves being in the barrels.
They probably would have figured it out, but it definitely gives them the idea that they're in Lake Town, for sure. But, I mean, they would have known that anyways, because where else are they going to be going if they're going to the dragon? In this scene, it was apparently 3 to 4 pages on the boat, which is a long time, because a page is about a minute on screen.
Right.
So 3 to 4 minutes talking on the boat with Bard, which is one of the main scenes people were talking about after the live event. And it's just Bilbo mothering Feely, whatever.
Is it really
about an orc
that long, though? I mean, it was long in the live event because what he was trying to illustrate was how Freeman does different, you know, Freeman gives him a different take every time they do it.
3 to 4 pages is just the lines they wrote on the script. They were showing different things, so there must be more to the scene that we realize, or maybe they were counting the previous thing where Bard finds them. I'm not really sure what the cutoff point is, but the fact that this scene could be longer...
That Bilbo responds to Bard's question that he asks at the end.
Yeah.
You know, what did you come east for?
And it could go as long as to them actually reaching Lake Town.
It's nothing. It's just a scratch.
No, that's more than just a scratch. That is an orc wound.
I don't know. Goblins, trolls, wargs. None of that was in the contract. Should never have let Bag in. That was my first mistake. So we have an old saying in the Shire. We learned it from birth. You never venture east.
So tell me, Master Hobbit. Why did you venture east?
Also, and I'm jumping ahead here, but it looks like this is how Bard actually smuggles them into
Lake they have
Town
fish
in the
barrels all of a sudden. And
so they're in Lake Town in barrels. So I thought to myself, and he's going, shh, So I'm thinking that what Bard does is he puts them back in the barrels and he smuggles them into Lake Town in the barrels.
And the barrels can't be empty because it's his job and it'd be suspicious if they were empty.
Right.
So he apparently fills them with fish. He must be really good at catching fish to catch that many.
Yeah. Well, I'm assuming he's probably using a net of, I mean, a big seine net or something.
Still, that's some skill and luck. And we see the dwarves multiple times in these sequences sneaking around in a very comical, unbelievable fashion, like physics don't matter anymore. Like they have a wire lifting one of them up into a building and then crashing through a window and rolling through.
Yeah. Now, and are they dressed when they have this scene where they're facing the, are they dressed again? Looks like they're actually dressed again and stuff. Or are they still in their underwear, basically? No,
I think they have some clothes going on just so they could be presentable to the people of Lake Town.
Yeah, Bard would have. Well, these soldiers, we already have mentioned this in an episode, but the soldiers' uniforms are quite interesting.
I kind of like that they went for a more Eastern Europe thing, just because we are in the East, Northern East.
They look like big garlic cloves.
I mean, I've seen armor like this in the real world, it makes them maybe more silly. It makes the master more silly, possibly, because they represent the master's point of view. One of my favorite things about the films is armor design. I really like designing armor. But yeah, they are quite silly. Eh.
I can kind of tell, just in because you're going kind of slow on that one, that the two scenes are definitely different. In other words, the dwarves were shot in a different room or different stage, and they were superimposed.
You can see the blue screen.
Yeah.
It's a really quick comp job that's not finished yet.
Yeah, no.
They all look like Obi-Wan Kenobi when he's dead.
They do.
We are your last hope. No, there is another. Yeah, they seem to be wearing a transitionary costume because later we see them wearing furs.
Right.
The people of Lake Town actually seem to respond positive to them, which we thought they might change based on those like Riddle and Dark episodes. Bard's at the forefront because we can see him in front of the guards. And the guards are in a circle around the dwarves.
The guards are facing in, aren't they? Yeah, and they're facing the dwarves,
so it
right?
seems like Bard is standing before the master here, maybe.
Of course, it could be a different scene. I mean, or, you know, like a different...
It looks like the same thing, though. Like
it doesn't. No, you're right, it does, because then the master comes out of his balcony, right?
Everything. I'm not sure if that's the same scene. Let me see. It's hard because it cuts away. I don't know for sure.
Yeah, it's hard to say.
Because the master seems to be in bed at one point, and he says, "Dwarves, I didn't give permission for dwarves to enter the city."
I have seen dwarves, sire.
Dwarves? I gave no permission for dwarves to enter the city.
Apparently, when he first gets the news, right, and then late, and then when he comes out, he's doing his political thing, his diplomatic thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, here's where he's talking.
Right here.
That's the scene. Because of spears, so they must be talking before the master. So maybe Bard is like,
"Welcome."
Why have Bard stand before the master? Maybe they found out that he snuck them in. Because he's definitely not behind the guards. He's in the circle where the dwarfs are. I just noticed that. I didn't notice that when I was looking, preparing for this. We also have a manservant character from the live event. I can't remember if he's in the book or not.
I don't believe there is a manservant in the book.
There might have been something. He seems to be very worm-tongue-esque, but not evil, just obedience, creepy... pedo stash sort of guy. I don't know. He's very weak looking character.
Yeah, so this is the scene where he's waking him up and saying there were dwarves. And he says, "I didn't give any permission for dwarves to come into town."
I like how they've incorporated sort of a scaling effect on all the architecture.
Look at this, over on the wall is a huge portrait of the master.
Yeah, they had a close up of him further back in this video. So he's definitely like the fact that there's a close up and a portrait of him. He's definitely a ridiculous character.
Right.
He's going to be more comical. But I like how they have a sort of scales and all the architecture, even on his bed. It's kind of like the dragon is influencing their very...
Absolutely.
Love that.
Interesting.
And here's Pete staring longingly at him for some reason. While Steven talks about himself. Is it like fish or something on his chair on the top?
Yeah, well, that's what, I mean, I'm gathering, because the guy, you know, he caught all that fish. I guess fish must be a big
Well, they're on a lake.
Yeah.
It would be a prime food.
I mean, it wasn't really that, I guess it was, actually, in the book. They talked about it, yeah. There he is, all in his master garb.
Oh, this is a really
important scene, I thought, from the live event. We see Bard in an alley, sort of talking to a guy, right. Not straight on, kind of like on the side.
Right.
So it's being very secretive. He talks to him, he hands him something, and then takes something from him.
And
so
this
probably
is where,
paying him for something.
Jackson's voiceover is saying that they're making Bard very enigmatic in this movie. That we're not to be, he's making it so the audience isn't sure whether he's a good man or a bad man.
He has created a character with a sense of enigma about him. He has a kind of almost a Robin Hoodish kind of mystery, slightly shady background. We're having a lot of fun. We're having a lot of fun with that character, not really knowing whether he is a good guy or a bad guy.
Which seems really weird to me if he's a parent, because it looks like he's a parent deliberately helping the dwarves here. Maybe he denies helping them in front of the master, but like doing this and then running from the guards, maybe it's just because we don't see him aligned with authority, so I'm not sure. But
well, and also Peter said that he's intended to be kind of a Robin Hoodish figure.
Mm-hmm.
So, which we actually discussed this in Riddles in the Dark, and I remember that statement and thought, well, that would actually put Bard in opposition to the authority and power.
I mean, he has to be just because he's going to take that power from the master. So if he was the same, it'd be pointless to have a transition in power between these two people. I wonder if it's going to be like Strider, because at first you're not really sure if Strider is a good or bad guy, even though he's helping the hobbits, but we find out pretty quickly he is.
I think it's probably going to be something similar to that.
I just don't see him being like that ambiguous, at least not for very long.
Well, he's not going to be to anybody who's read the book. I mean, anybody who's read The Hobbit's going to know he's not. Yeah, I do find it a little odd that he wants to make him an enigma, because anybody who's read the book will know he's not. Will know he's
maybe he was saying that in the book he was somewhat of an enigma because he doesn't show up until so late and he has all this past. Maybe something like that.
Your statement was in the movie, we want to make him an enigmatic character like that. I guess what he's talking about is people who haven't read the book, you know, and maybe they've done their homework and the demographics are that there's a good percentage of people that haven't read the book. So, mm-hmm.
But we see him in some other shots running around the city and sneaking around. And here we see him coming below the city to a lower level. We walkways over the actual water, which I can imagine there being a little basement level. And we see him sliding down, and I didn't notice this at first, but you see some Bilbo running.
Oh, Bilbo. Uh-huh.
Or I thought it was someone else earlier.
It's like Bilbo.
Some reason I saw Dwalin was running by, so maybe I have another clip snuck in here on accident. But we also see some other guy down here, and I think that's Bard's son, because he's younger.
Oh, okay.
He's down below. He doesn't care that these people are running past him.
Right.
So he's working with Bard to sneak them around. We have another scene of him running across the water. Everyone thought maybe it was fire, but I think it's just the lens reacting to some set lights, because you see other people around the town and they're just going about their business, pouring water. So he just seems to be hurrying because it's part of his personality running around.
Right.
We also have some shots in the live event footage of him running from a guard, knocking things over to slow him down through a markety area, spinning around. So, that's more the Robin Hood thing. So maybe he's causing a distraction for the dwarves to sneak in.
Oh, it could be. Or sneak out, one of the two.
I don't think they need to sneak out, because we see them in the next shot. Let me get to it. They're all suddenly wearing furs.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, you're right.
Bright colors. And then we see them wearing the same clothes on a boat with the people of Lake Town waving them farewell as they are in a boat going upriver to what
I ice-filled river.
Swelling mountain. Yeah, I guess the ice thing is just because they're in the north and sleeping giant sort of metaphor. Maybe it's like, oh, they're asleep, so it's frozen. They're not really who they're meant to be. So they seem to approve of the dwarfs, people of Lake Town. Which I wasn't sure about.
So then
we get to the actual mountain, finally.
Right.
Thorin is looking at the map. They have an earthquake moment.
Earthquake moment, yeah.
I don't see Bilbo anywhere, but he could be nearby. They're wearing the furs they left with, so definitely the furs are the end of the Lake Town stuff. So Smaug has been aroused enough to shake a mountain. So I wonder if this is the cup being stolen and him coming out and them having to run. Could be.
Well, yeah, that's what I thought when I saw this, was it was going to be the point where the dragon's going to come out.
Which means we would get that far in the movie. I'm really unsure about the cutoff point.
Yeah, I don't. Well, I personally don't think it's. I think Smaug's not going to get killed until the third movie, the beginning of the third movie.
Marketing reasons alone, I'm thinking that it'd just be really hard to sell it. We see Bilbo inside. He's wearing the blue fur robe that he got in Lake Town.
Right. Right.
Apparently, he somehow managed to get under a pile of gold. I don't know how. Maybe he got knocked down by Smaug, and he puts on the ring in the scene.
Yeah, he says that I'm about to put on the ring and try to get away from him.
Mm-hmm. And he's kind of not acting completely serious here, so I think it's just a rehearsal take for the camera framing.
Right.
Okay, so that's the end of the dwarf and Bilbo arc of the footage we've seen. So I think we got a lot out of the live event because a lot of subtle details. Like I didn't even notice Bard's son for the longest time.
Right.
Kind of the nature of Bard and sneaking around. Right. We also got the clip, apparently the cinema clip that was the full clip of Gandalf and Radagast, not in Dol Guldur, which I thought at first. It's in a place where the Tomb of the Nazgul are.
The High Fells,
mm-hmm. which they actually use an actual name, and they said it was Rudar, which, good thing I have the map on this desktop that I have here that I'm sharing with you, is right here. That's the name, big letters. Okay. So that's where the right. Eden moved.
So he actually had to go. That's right. Corey said that. He had to go back
all
to the west
up here.
Of the Misty Mountains.
It's ridiculous. So how? Yeah. So he has to go from here
right.
in South Mirkwood. He probably gets a little this far up before turning back.
The Carrick is up further. See where the Carrick is? Yeah, it's right there. If he leaves from Beorn's.
Okay, actually, that's not as far as that. But he still has to go on the other side of the Misty Mountains, which was hard enough.
Right.
He's apparently meeting Radagast there, because I don't think Radagast says this is
Radagast
a nice place to be.
Radagast seems very confused, like he doesn't even understand why he's there.
Yeah, he says this isn't a nice place to meet, I think, not be.
Right.
So maybe it was planned.
Yeah, he did say nice place to meet, yeah.
Yeah, so he has to go all the way up there, and then back here, which isn't a big deal on film, but it means you're going to have to cut away. To a different scene, so it's not happening all at once.
That's crazy to me. I just don't understand. I mean,
they're dragging it out.
It would have made a heck of a lot more sense to have the Nazgul tombs have been in Dol Guldur, and then
it would have made a heck of a lot more sense to not have the Nazgul in the film.
Well, this is true. Yes.
We actually got this scene in one of the earlier trailers, and it was the trailer they showed in September of last year after the film announcement. So maybe they didn't have time to make a new trailer. Of him sneaking around.
Right.
And the dialogue isn't that revealing besides
the
location.
This is the clip he showed at CinemaCon last year, isn't it?
I wouldn't know 100%, but you said it was earlier.
I'm pretty sure it is, because we had somebody did it like a, blow-by-blow of the thing, and, the dialogue and everything, and it matched.
Okay. So we'd have to have the scene cut away to the dwarves, which I think would maybe be halfway through Mirkwood. I'm not really sure. It depends on exactly what they're doing with this arc.
I mean, I could see maybe if Gandalf hitches a ride on an eagle.
Well, they are
That's the only thing I can think of is that would justify him going back like that. I mean, here they just got through the Misty Mountains and they've, made the dwarves really angry. I mean, how's he expect to get back through the Misty Mountains again? So maybe, I could see him taking the eagle back. But like you said earlier, with everything else that's going on in this movie, this whole activity of Gandalf's, it just confuses me. It confuses me. I just don't. Obviously, we're going to see how it fits in, but.
It feels like they're just stretching it out, Because they don't. I think what they're doing. And I'm starting to suspect it more and more, is that the end of Gandalf's arc in this film is, guess what, the Necromancer is Sauron. That's going to be like the end of it. Because they don't maybe they don't want to kill this really higher level villain than Smaug off too soon, because that wouldn't be weird. It's really awkward to have it, because the audience already knows who Sauron is. So they're like, he's around, who cares about the dragon? That's what they might think.
Yeah, well, but the Battle of Dol Guldur, what really did happen was that they thought they had driven the Necromancer out and they discovered that they'd been duped. I mean, there's no reason why that can't still happen.
Last year on that riddle, I said that he wasn't actually going to be there. There's a scene in War in the North where they climb up a tower and the villain in that game's like, I'm going to fly away, and he jumps off the tower and then escapes by air travel. I'm like, that was
one of the reasons the Nazgul did get introduced into the Hobbit is tied to that. You know, that they're somehow connected with spiriting him off, they're the rear guard while he makes his escape and stuff.
It's really weird. It was really weird that one even showed up in the first film, just coming out of the wall.
I know. Well, there's just these additions. You know, we talked about, and I think the last Wheels in the Dark we even talked about, even Azog, even having Azog.
Oh, man, I hate Azog so like, it's much. Just... Oh, he looks too. Like Kronos from God of War, and I'm just like,
Well, I don't even do games, but to me he does. He looks like something in a game. I mean, he takes me out of the story every time I see him.
Also, just a lot of the CG in the first film looked really fake. There's one part where the ponies are not real. They're CG.
And they're acting.
The animation's pretty stiff on them because they're background characters, but they're not doing anything. They're not getting picked up by trolls. Bilbo's just standing next to them. I'm like, why are they fake?
I know.
The CG in Lord of the Rings trilogy is less advanced, but they blended it better with the shots. Kind of like I only have a few problems with it still.
Yeah. I don't know.
But
then we have the enigmatic bulk.
And
it is important, I think, to point out the fact that Bulk was not in any of the V-blogs. He was not in the live event. But we did get marketing photos of him, you know. And now there was an explanation in the sense that the guy who plays Azog said that originally the guy who plays Bulg was playing Azog. And then
making of Azog.
And
CG
now he plays Bulg.
And he doesn't look like Bulg.
Well, but because his explanation as to why Bulg was the one being featured so much last year was because Peter had gone back to the drawing board to do Azog, they did not have an Azog in time for any of the promo shots.
Because what I saw was a video showing the change of time over Azog, and they showed the original Azog design where he was a guy in a suit, and he didn't look like Bulg, and they just replaced all of that at the last minute. So it's really hard to tell what the stages of development were. Bulg probably had a bigger role, but
well, the guy who plays Azog explained that the person who plays Bulg is an actor friend of his, and I guess Peter didn't like. He originally played Azog because they both went up for the Azog role, and his friend got it, and then Pete didn't like the character. He didn't like it; just wasn't working. But they were so far along in the production. He said he literally got called in to be Azog, and I mean, you know. Like he said, you know, they were just too far along for like the marketing department couldn't get Azog together fast enough, which also to me would explain the sloppy CGI of Azog. It's not an excuse, but I just, you know, it's like,
you know what, the animation was fine. It was just, I didn't like the actual style of the lighting on CG elements, and I didn't like the way it was blended in with the film. And I don't like the way The Hobbit looks in general. Because it looks really fake, and I like The Lord of the Rings because it looks really real. And it's a problem not just with The Hobbit, but with a lot of films just being made for the last few years. And it's blah, blah, blah. I could go on. That's my field, so I could go on and on and on. But I guess that would make more sense, because I was saying if the original Azog had been a bigger deal, then we would have seen an action figure look like the guy in the video. But I guess it was Bulg. All the promotional images we see of him have the now pretty recognizable Dolgoldr set. He's definitely there. And if he is there, and that hasn't changed, then if Gandalf doesn't get to Dolgoldr because he has to go to the High Fells first, he's not going to have enough time to get to Mirkwood. He's going to be very separate, so I don't think he's going to even be with a group.
No,
even
I don't think
he
better
the
not
same
be. That's
style
really
of armor, which
off.
Is the V-shaped armor with the skeletons, which is the Dolgoldr orc design. So it's orcs from Moria or something like that.
That's probably the Gundabad design. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He definitely makes it. Gandalf definitely makes it to Dolgoldr, and there it's definitely Thrain. We see new Thrain footage of him jumping in the air really high, like a strange dwarf ninja. I don't.
Well, and who is this? That's not Gandalf on the right, is it? Somebody wearing
suspenders? It looks like it's rehearsal. That costume must be really hot.
I got it, okay.
So they probably took it off.
So just
you can kind of see the camera down there.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a close-up on Gandalf suddenly being attacked by this ninja dwarf. And it's still Goldor because you can see the
especially
spike
if Thrian is actually on his last leg, so to speak, and he's about to die.
He has a weapon. You see that?
Yeah.
He somehow got a sword. Who gave him? So maybe he was released on him.
Yeah. The other thing is this also could be a flashback.
But he's never in the movie. It said that he's never been to Dol Guldur. Like Gandalf says that in the first film, and it really bothers me. It bothers me to no end because I'm like map and key. How did you get?
Well, I think the map and key got given to him another time.
Yeah, I don't think it's even going
to
be.
I mean, my theory is it got given to. It got given to. One theory of mine is that Thrian calls Gandalf in before the Battle of Azanobazar because for all Thrian knows, they're all going to be wiped out. And mm-hmm. he wants to give the map of key to somebody he can trust, you know. So, I mean, there's all kinds mm-hmm. of different ways they could have dealt with
that. While those theories are probably going to be what the director imagined, I've reached the point where I'm like, I can't imagine us flashing back to that point. I just don't see there being room or time. I could be totally wrong on this. But it would seem really awkward to just toss that in just for some exposition that everyone's already accepted at this point. The movie audience isn't questioning.
I mean, you may not, you know, mm-hmm. I mean. But I just
think
it's kind of
weird
that all Thorin says, you know, where'd you get this? And he says, your father gave it to me. And then that's it. You know, that they're just going to
He had no reaction. And the audience yeah. accepted it. So technically yeah. they don't have to. If no one's asking, why point out the question type of thing? So I think that's one of the riddles that's just not going to be answered. But I could be totally. This is where I could, you know, become the loser of the Riddle of the Dark.
Anyway, so it's second. So
the only other things I edited together in this video were deleted scenes from the first film, which was the Hobbit thing where Bilbo is younger.
Yeah.
Maybe somebody's birthday.
Where Gandalf meets the little boy Bilbo.
Mm-hmm. So they had a lot of stuff going on in the scene. Tons of actors, tons of costumes, festival, yeah. Gandalf doing fireworks probably. And then the other scene which I was disappointed in not being there was this Bilbo and Elrond scene
yeah,
of them talking together.
Bilbo sees Narsil, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which yeah. is really obvious because that was in the trailer.
That's pretty cool.
And it wasn't in the film, so it's extended edition.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah.
And that's basically everything.
That's a lot of stuff.
Later.
You know, that's a lot of stuff. But I mean, I think, you know, really you've given people, hopefully the listeners, a good feel for the kind of thing to look for when these trailers finally do come out, you know, when Jackson finally does put something out.
Nice refresher in the old
and
stuff.
And I think, you know, you've hit the chronology really well. I think the big question is, you know, where on earth the Gandalf scenes are going to get sprinkled in. And you know, it may be two towers-like, where we kind of just go back and forth throughout the movie.
Mm-hmm, except there really is a lot of stuff happening in the main arc. It's not like five different arcs divided. It's really only two. So I don't know. I don't think they're going to be equally balanced. And if they are, what are they going to fill it with? You know.
Yeah, I don't know.
But
we probably won't get
Battle of Gordor in this
movie.
We'll
go to Lorien because, you know, we've got the foreshadow of Galadriel saying, you know, if you need me, call on me. And we also have Philippa Boyens telling us how, you know, awesome kick-ass Galadriel is at the Battle of Dol Guldur. So we know she's going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that whole thing. I don't know. You know, yeah, I hope he does. I hope he doesn't make the two sides equal because there's – you know, I hope he sticks.
Yeah, I think we might be getting the Battle of Dol Guldur in the beginning of the third film because I don't know if they'll have time.
The argument there is people believe.
Yeah, Gandalf needs to get back, but they could drag it out.
No, that he wouldn't put two battles in the same movie.
Hmm.
That the you know the third movie is about the Battle of Five
There's
Armies.
There's an orc battle in this movie.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's hard to say. I kind of tend to agree that the Battle of Dol Guldur will be in the second movie because, you know,
I wanted to be in the second movie and get it over with, but it's really, I don't know.
Well, he likes to pander to the people that like battle scenes. And so, you know, you need a big battle for movie two, but I don't know.
It's one of the things I want to wait more on for sure.
Yeah, well, that's true because, I mean, when the trailer comes out, I think we will have this question much more clearly, you know, mm-hmm. as clearly answered as we can get it. Because obviously, if there's no Battle of Dol Guldur scenes in the trailer, then, you know, that makes it more likely that it's in movie three.
Yeah.
But still, I don't know. I just, I mean, and also if See, I also think that the death of Smaug is going to happen in the beginning of film three. So I can't see those two things happening in the beginning of film three.
Yeah, right now it seems like he's just going to fly out.
The Battle of Dol Guldur will be like the climax of film two in terms of getting rid of the bad guy. And then Smaug is going to get off in the beginning of film three. But I don't know. We shall see.
Yeah. It'll probably just end with the movie being like, oh, I'm flying out of the mountain. Oh, no, trouble. Next time.
Yeah,
Dragon Ball Z.
Exactly. I mean, I think what's going to happen is, you know, Smaug's going to get all ticked off and leave for Lake Town at the end of movie two. You know, like, uh-oh. Or the dwarves may go, oh, okay, he's gone. Or say, I don't know.
It's like, where did the dragon go? Dun, dun.
Then the other one is, you know, I guess with that too is, you know, when are we going to start seeing the dragon sickness take hold of Thorin? You know, where along the line are we going to see that?
We might get a foreshadowing moment like we did in film one.
You know,
but I don't think it's really going to happen until film three.
Right. I mean, in the book, it starts for all of them pretty much when they're sitting on the ledge there. But, you know, we maybe see the beginning of it, but you're right. I would imagine it's not going to actually develop fully until film three. So... lots of unanswered questions. But,
more questions.
I don't know. My jury's still out on this whole thing. I mean, I did a research paper on the evolution of The Hobbit. And to tell you the truth, as far as adaptations go, this is probably one of the best adaptations that's ever been done of The Hobbit. Because the other adaptations...
Well, the other ones are just horrible. Crazy.
Well, I'm talking about the plays also. I mean, there were plays that were done in Tolkien's lifetime that were, you know, they changed where the dragon got killed. I mean, it was just like the changes were, you know, way crazy.
Oh, before we end this, I kind of want this as a conundrum, even though the answer is totally no. But I really think the most nerdy thing they could do to the really deep Tolkien fans is have Bilbo have that dream of Turin. It will never happen, but oh
you
my
mean,
god.
Bilbo or Smaug? Because Smaug, in the book, it's Smaug that has the
dream. Oh, it's Smaug. Oh, I'm messing things up. But it would be so awesome, but it will never happen. But it's like the only rights they have.
That's sort of the talking purse. That's kind of the talking purse of film two, isn't it? Yeah, it's the only thing they have. That's true. It's. I mean, it is in the book. They have the rights to it.
He's there.
We don't have to call him Turin, right?
No, because it's just a dream. You don't have to name anyone. It's just the imagery.
That's right.
It would be really awesome.
It would be interesting if the dragon did have that dream.
But I really, really doubt it will happen, but still.
Well, if Laura and I do a digest of this episode, we'll maybe have that be the conundrum.
Maybe.
We'll Smaug dream of Turin.
Dream of Turin.
Well, listen, thanks for all the hard work you've done on this.
Sorry if I was really long-winded.
No, well, you know, in the tradition of Riddles in the Dark,
I'm just sorry
that we couldn't play the video along with this so that the folks could see it.
Yeah,
but we just can't because we just don't have the copyright to it, so we can't publish it. But
hopefully, we describe things thoroughly enough for you guys.
And I would say one thing is maybe if somebody has a specific question, you know, like we've maybe been really unclear because we're talking and seeing the picture, let us know what we're talking about and maybe we could put a still someplace.
Or we could just answer on Facebook in the comments.
I'll probably see everything
on there anyways.
So you know, ask us if there's something that you're not clear about that we were completely like, you know, stupid about trying to describe.
Hey, this thing here. Yeah, that thing's really great. What thing? I was trying not to do that.
What is she talking about?
Hopefully. You
know, yeah, so just let us know because it's a little difficult to do this. But anyway, other than that, I think, you know, you've just done a really good job putting stuff together and, you know, it's going to be interesting to come back and look at this once the movie's out, isn't it?
I don't think I'll look at it, but... I'll remember.
Or actually, you can continue on. You know, when the trailer comes out and stuff, you can just keep this.
I didn't delete the file I edited it in, so I could put it back in. I could definitely post it after film two and see how close. Because I mean, by then, who cares if it's copyrighted?
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, good. Well, thanks very much, everybody, for listening. And Brianna, anything else you want to add before we?
One last thing.
Down?
I think I probably will be a judge this year. I think I'm just going to do
it
because, you know,
what? You?
Even if I am going to be a judge, if I still guessed right, I guessed right. And to me, I still won.
That's right.
Honestly, I argued that some of the judges' calls, like the same questions kind of miffed Dave last year, but we accepted them. like, if I had really argued against those, I would have gotten more riddles wrong, technically. And I would have gotten one of the conundrums, to, like, write or something.
Well, so, actually, there was you and I can't remember who else, but there was another person that scored really, really high.
Yeah, they got the same number of riddles right, but I got more conundrums than them. So.
Right. So I think, you know, you two will definitely be asked, because it just makes sense to me that the winners of the previous year become the judges of the following year. And this year, we're not hooking Riddles in the Dark to Mythmoot. The Riddles in the Dark will be done separately and probably after Mythmoot, which means that there will be time for people to try to bribe the judges before the judges actually turn in their answers.
I will accept all prop swords sent to me.
There we go. So, you know, we'll make sure people know. So we'll announce. So Brianna is officially accepting. So Brianna's going to be a judge for Riddles in the Dark year two. And then, you know, we'll let you know who else is going to be. But that's great. That's awesome.
Might as well just accept it now. It's going to happen.
Yeah. And of course, you'll probably have Dave giving you, you know, his opinion about things.
Oh, I expect all your guys' opinions about things.
Well, Dave actually wrote last year's judges about, you know, like a 9-page brief. Because
he has the same crazy habits that I have. Okay.
Yes, good. He does. And he takes full advantage. So.
The notes that we use for the show are 5 pages long, by the way, audience. I type them up.
Right. Crazy. Okay, good. Well, thanks very much. That's great to know. Well, would you like to you know, give the signature exit line? Do you remember what it is?
You know what? I did this once when I was podcasting. I totally screwed it up. So maybe you should do it.
All right.
I can't remember now that I'm saying
it. I know. When you put it on the spot. Well, I'll tell you what it is at the same time I say goodbye to everybody. Thanks for listening and Godspeed. So I hope you enjoyed that episode, that bonus Riddles in the Dark Digest episode. It went kind of long, I think, because we were trying to paint pictures for you with our words since we couldn't share the video with you. Hopefully that worked and you were able to sort of follow along. Now, as promised, here is the conundrum that Laura and I have come up with for the bonus digest. This is one that won't fit any place else, I'm sure, so it's a bonus conundrum. Ready? Is Keely hotter than Thorin? Yes or no? Is Keely hotter than Thorin? This is our hot dwarf conundrum. Okay, so... Jackson's trailer is either about due to come out as you listen to this, or it's out already for movie 2. We'll see how well this episode stacked up against it, and I'm sure we'll be talking a lot about it on the site and in future episodes of Riddles in the Dark and Riddles in the Dark Digest. So until then, thanks for listening, and Godspeed.